Hey, I'm Charlie, and thanks for being here today. If you're already a subscriber to the show, thank you so much. You're incredible, and your support means more than you know. And if you're here for the first time, make sure you subscribe to the show, because today, like in every episode, I'm bringing you the most amazing, childless, child-free content on the internet that teaches you how to overcome those limiting beliefs you have about yourself and stop the self-sabotaging behaviors that are holding you back from embracing a life you deserve.
You're listening to the Life Beyond Infertility podcast with Charlie Dice, the show that teaches you how to get unstuck from the grief and loss of infertility so that you can accept and embrace a joyful life beyond it.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Life Beyond Infertility podcast. Today's guest is Lana Manikowski. She is a life after infertility coach, as well as has her own podcast, the So Now What podcast. And we're going to jump into some topics specifically related to those of us that went through a fertility journey and didn't come out with Earthside children. So I'm really excited for today's episode. I think it's going to be really relevant to a lot of you listening. So welcome, Lana, to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here on your beautiful podcast.
Yeah, so let's just dive right in. I know you talk about it openly on your social channels and on your website, but for the listeners to have some context of how you got to this point, what's your story with infertility?
Well, my story starts, I was age 37. I was relatively a newlywed 2 years into being married and ended up, through the advice of a friend of mine who had gone through fertility treatments, getting a workup. I didn't ever think I was going to have some sort of diagnosis related to infertility, but when I went for a workup and had sort of the initial numbers presented to me, I was classified as somebody who was an unexplained infertility patient. And that's really where my journey began, of trying to figure out how to make myself explainable again. Because when you have that type of diagnosis, you really are searching for more. Like, I wanted to know that there was some clinical reason, and to be considered unexplained kept me living in limbo for a really long time. So from there, I pursued a cumulative 7 years of treatments on and off, starting with IUI and then some breaks in between, changes of clinics, and then I went through multiple rounds of IVF, both in Chicago where I live, and then moved on to Colorado to a well-known institution out there, and ended up having one frozen embryo that at the end of my journey through IVF, when we realized that we were kind of at a crossroads of not having really a high volume of retrievals, we decided to thaw the one frozen embryo and have chromosomal testing, and it ended up having trisomy 16, which was presented to me as something that would never mature into a living pregnancy or a living child or a full-term pregnancy. So that's where my journey ended. And I was not given any resources, and not even a therapist, not a phone call to check in to see how I was doing. And so I spent the next several years just trying to figure it out on my own.
Well, that's a really powerful story. And first of all, I just want to say I'm so sorry that you had to go through all of that. And your story is eerily similar to my own. Did you and your husband always want children? Was that something that you were, you know, open about when you got married later in life?
I think I don't remember us ever having a distinctive talk about it, but it was something that he desired and I know that I desired. However, I didn't put it on top of my priority list. When I got out of college, I was much more interested in accelerating myself in a career-wise and traveling quite a bit. I was very active social life, and I was very regular as far as like my cycle went. So I just never had an indication that I would have trouble. And until we did, then it was just sort of like this retrospective look at, I wish I would have thought about maybe being more proactive. And I don't know that I necessarily would have gotten married sooner or tried sooner, but I felt like there wasn't much on my radar that was telling me to consider preserving something for the future. So I guess a long way to say, we never really talked about it yet. We both were much in line with wanting to do whatever we could to have our own biological children.
Yeah, and that makes complete sense to me because looking back, being in this space, and I'm sure you're the same way, being in this space now for a while, yeah, I should have been more proactive about doing things that would have preserved my reproductive health, my eggs, even if I didn't want to get married. But I don't think anybody really talked about it then, or there weren't as many options. And I don't, did you feel the same way? I just didn't know that it was a thing, really. I mean, you hear about it from celebrities and other people like that, but for the everyday person, freezing my eggs or having my eggs, putting them through testing to see how healthy they were, how many I had, it just wasn't something that I ever thought about.
Same. And I did rack my brain being like, did I have my OBGYN bring it up to me at one of my annual visits? Because I was always very routine about, you know, going for my annual OB visits, but was I just not in a mindset to think I would need it? So I don't really recall ever having that firm conversation about like, okay, you're getting into your, you know, mid-30s, like you might want to think about this. So either I just wasn't tuned into it because I was just living a single and fun career-oriented and fun-oriented life. But yeah, I just didn't, nothing really rings true to me as far as like honest conversations that I was given with my medical practitioners.
Yeah. And something you brought up in your intro too, as far as when you were done with treatment, going along that same line of not having a conversation with your OB, you mentioned about not having any sort of conversation at the end of fertility treatments or having any sort of resources to, you know, go to at least see, okay, well, where do I go from here? What do I do now? And I felt the same exact way. I remember distinctly asking my OB when we walked out of the fertility clinic for the last time, like, is there a support group that's available that I can join to just have some sort of community, feel like I'm not the only one out there that has walked out of your clinic without a baby in my arms? And the answer was no. And that was shocking to me. There was no pamphlet given. There was no support group. There was no phone call made, like you said. I know how I felt, but I want to hear how you felt, you know, at that moment.
Well, our last conversation was over the phone because I live in Chicago. The clinic where we went through our last couple rounds was in Colorado. So most of our consultations and things, follow-up appointments, were via phone before telehealth was a thing. I remember the doctor that we worked with, the reproductive endocrinologist that we were working with, presented the options to get an egg donor or to pursue adoption. And I'm guessing in his mind, that was probably something that he felt was another thing to think about. So I didn't necessarily know at that point that it was the end of the road for me. We knew that we wanted to have, if we were going to do anything, we either were going to do adoption or we were going to have our own biological child. We didn't want to do an egg donor. So we knew that was off the table right away. And then we started thinking about adoption. We looked into doing international adoption. And there just seemed to be a lot of limitations for that. And frankly, I just didn't know that I could put myself through more heartache. I was really, in hindsight, I think I was just really trying to preserve myself because I just couldn't imagine being one of those people that you saw in the movies who on the, you know, 2 hours before they were supposed to take the baby home, a decision was made. And I just didn't have the ability to just put myself in a position to go through more heartache. And I try to make amends in my mind with the clinic that maybe they just thought that they gave me the best options that they could offer me next. But if I were to have a conversation with someone at a clinic, I would tell them, like, your patients want to hear from you. Like, you can't make that decision in a week after going through what we've been through, and the navigation of what might be next takes a little bit of time. So I would love to see clinics like 6 months later, just check in and be like, what did you decide? Is there any more support we can offer you? And depending on what you decided, have people like you and me and other vocal people in the community that maybe have resources, whether it's a podcast, a book, a certified life coach, like a therapist who's been through it. Because I think the other part of it too is, as patients like us, we want to be able to relate to somebody and to go to a therapist who has kids of their own. I don't know that I would have even related to somebody like that, because at the point I was there, like, I felt like I needed somebody that could really connect to me and to my story. And that wasn't given, a therapist wasn't given to me as an option at all. But had I had somebody that was infertile or childless after infertility, I feel like I would have related more and maybe even gravitated to that option more, but it wasn't an option.
Yeah. And I mean, I'll tell you, I did do the therapy route after our journey, and I did not find someone that was childless, not by choice, or even child-free, not by choice. And like you said, she was great, and I don't take anything away from therapy. I think it's absolutely wonderful and it definitely has its place, but for something so unique and so niche as this, it really, there was always that disconnect between the two of us on some subconscious level, because she hadn't experienced what I did. And finding other resources out there at that time for people that were exactly like me would have been so beneficial. And I want to, when you said you weren't quite sure you were finished with your family building journey after that last phone consult with your clinic, how did you and your husband decide then when you were done? How did that conversation come up?
Ooh, well, it was very emotional. I would say it probably took several months. We, frankly, if my husband was up for it, I probably would have done an egg donor, but it was something that we agreed upon when we went into treatment, that we both wanted to be on the same page and respect one another's decisions. So I knew right away that that was not an option, but it probably was maybe 7 or 8 months of considering the adoption process. So I remember joining the mailing list of somebody that had like an adoption program, and they would have newsletters of great stories about kids that ended up in homes and how they were thriving. And so there was part of me that was like, oh, you know, that could be me. I could be giving someone a chance. And there was also a part of me that thought, well, what if I don't end up with a kid who does well, or a kid who has a history of who knows what during their in uterine experience. And I just, there was part of me that was really like scared that I would end up not being able to manage being a good mom to somebody that wasn't biologically known to me, I would say, because I think that there's a lot of restriction that's given to you about the health history of the infants. And so I spent a lot of time judging myself that I wasn't a good person, that I wouldn't be willing to open my home to a child that needed a home, regardless of what they ended up doing with their life or if they had emotional or cognitive issues. It was just really hard, I think, to make that decision and to be able to vocalize it. It's only been within the last year that I've really been able to be that open and honest about the judgment that I had of myself, because I felt like I wasn't a good person to say no to the adoption route. To answer your question, if I had to put a timeline on it, I would say it was maybe between 7 to 12 months that we thought about it and looked into other opportunities. My family's from a different country, so we looked in the native country where my family's from to adopt children and had some potential there, but we would have had to leave. If a child came available, we would have had to leave and spend 3 months under supervision by the government, which I respect. They want to make sure that their kids that are leaving the country are going to good, wholesome families. But we just weren't at a position where we were going to leave our jobs and uproot and move to Europe for 3 months and then wait to hear if we were accepted as parents or not. That's more of a long-winded answer, but I feel like women really need to know that it's okay if they're feeling judged by themselves for not saying yes to adoption, because I don't think you hear that message enough. Easy for people who maybe have adopted or people that have their own biological kids, when you tell them that you can't have kids, that they tell you you can always adopt. But to actually say yes to that and feel that you're making the right decision for you, I feel like is a totally different story.
Yeah, and I'm sure we could have a whole nother episode where we talk about that, because we felt the same way. We actually didn't even look into it near as much as it sounds like you and your husband did, because my husband's family runs a foster care agency. And so we've always had a very close tie to that journey or that method of parenthood. And you do see the good, the bad, and the ugly, and it's its own sort of trauma. And like you said, we just had been through so much that we weren't willing to put ourselves through that again at that point. And I do agree with what you said as far as people need to know that adoption is not just a fallback plan. It's not just a plan B. You really have to put in the time and the research and really the self-reflection to see if that's something that you feel called to do. Because if you're not, then I've seen the other side of it. It's better if you don't. It's better for the child. It's better for you. And it's better for everyone if you just don't put yourself in that situation. So I want to thank you for being brave and sharing that perspective and for bringing awareness to it, because I think it is still stigmatized that people, especially women, say that, no, I did not want to pursue adoption, and have that be okay. Have that be normalized.
And it's very, I think a lot of people think, a lot of people who have not been through the journey that you and I have been through think that adoption is like going to the grocery store and you're just like, oh, well, I'm just going to pick up a kid tomorrow. And there's so much more complexity that comes with it. And I just want women to know that you can still respect your decision and be proud of your decision, even if it feels like sometimes people judge you. And people that are judging you just don't know the amount of like love and contemplation you put into your decision, because it's not an easy decision to make.
Yeah, 100%. So you and your husband came to the decision that you were not going to pursue any other path to family building. I know before we started recording, you and I had talked about how you weren't really even sure that what you were going through was grief. Can you talk about where your head was at during that time after you had made the decision to remain childless, not by choice, and kind of what that felt like, how you worked through that?
I felt very lost, really. I always considered myself someone who was energetic, high functioning, very successful in their career, and not really fearful of much, very ambitious, really. And I felt like I didn't really know who I was anymore. And there was this moments that I would get the calls from my friends who were very supportive and very respectful of what I was going through, but they had their own goals of family building. And so when I would find out that one of them was pregnant, I'd have these like secret thoughts of like, oh, you know, this is maybe my first time saying this, Charlie, I'll be quite honest with you publicly, that I hope that they have a miscarriage, or I hope that something happens, because not because I really wanted it for them, but because I felt like it was one less person that I was able to connect to. And then I started being like, what an awful person I've turned into. Like, I felt like it wasn't who I was always thought myself to be. I was just like turning into this bitter person. Like, who wishes that on friends? And again, it wasn't like pointed to that person. It was more that experience that I felt like nobody else could understand the heartache that I had been through and the level of torment that emotionally I felt was going on for me. And then I started to recognize, and I don't know that there was like a light bulb moment, but I recognized like I was actually grieving. And I didn't know that grief could be possible to somebody who didn't lose someone who ever had a heartbeat, or whether it was an animal or a parent or a grandparent. And then I started to feel like, okay, well, if I can put maybe a word on it, like grief, at least that would allow me to see that what I'm experiencing isn't something abnormal. And it's become like really something that I've been focusing on and try to be more verbal about in my community, because I think we spend a lot of time judging ourselves because we don't hear anyone talking about grieving something that was only ever a dream. And for most of us, motherhood has been a lifelong dream. And when you think about motherhood, whether it was when you were 5 years old, playing with a Cabbage Patch doll or your American Girl doll, whatever it is, you had these visions of what you were going to end up being like and how your life would unfold. So we feel really connected, and this dream of motherhood felt so concrete. And when it's not available to you anymore, even though it was only ever something in your brain, it feels just so ripping of something because you just don't have the ability to envision yourself. And it's like you have to restart yourself all over again and figure out who you are. And that's where I was really struggling because I didn't know who I was anymore. I didn't think I would be working a corporate job for the rest of my life. I thought I was going to have a kid and maybe step back from work for some years and then go back into the workplace later. So then here I was like, okay, well, I have this job that I don't even know if I see myself being fulfilled by. There was that all I have to fulfill myself. And then my marriage with my husband, although it was like very concrete and we had each other's back, I was like, oh, but we're never going to have kids that are going to break up the monotony for us. Is this going to be something that I feel is going to like last me the next 40 years of my life or 50 years, whatever it is? And so the grief part really allowed me to see that what I was going through was an emotional process. And that's something that I'm, you know, pursuing now. I'm a certified life coach and I'm getting a advanced degree in grief and post-traumatic growth starting actually this month. And it's something that I really am focused on becoming more of somebody who brings light to that topic in our community because it's just not talked about enough.
Your answer to the start of that question is so powerful. And I want to thank you for sharing that and being just 100% honest and real. And I think it's something that a lot of us are thinking in our heads as we're going through that, wishing, not even wishing ill on somebody else, but just wishing that we didn't feel so alone in it. We don't certainly wish for bad things to happen to other people, but we just wish for someone to understand us and to really understand what we're going through. So I think it's completely valid. And I know that I felt the same way after we had decided to end our journey. Really, thank you for opening up and sharing that piece of your story.
Yeah, because I, like I said, it's not like I was like, oh, this person's name, I hope they have, you know, a traumatic end to their journey. But it was more so me feeling so unrelatable that I felt like it was one less person that I could relate to if their dream of motherhood came true. And here I was, the one always going to be stuck without it.
Yeah, absolutely. So then how did you start to, you talked about just kind of feeling like even though you had a solid marriage and you had a good career, there's got to be more to life, or what do I do with this sense of purpose that I had that I thought I was going to put into motherhood that now I don't? How did you make that shift to starting to dig out of that grief?
It was actually as a repercussion from fertility treatments and my weight gain. And I don't know if I could say universally, but, you know, a lot of us go through medicated, you know, IVF cycles, or even if it's IUI and there's a significant change in your body. And for me, after my journey ended, I used food as a crutch. It was like really the only thing I'd get excited about when I came home from work was what I was going to eat or what I was going to make for dinner. And it became really like a big, food became a comfort for me. And it also continued to make my body seem unrecognizable. So here I was emotionally not being able to feel normal, but physically looking in the mirror and not fitting in my clothes and not feeling confident in how I looked. I started listening to a woman's podcast. Her name's Corinne Crabtree. And she really just, her message spoke to me. She was a certified life coach, which I didn't know at the time. I just thought she was a weight loss coach. And I didn't really know what life coaching was at the time. And through her message, she was the first person who allowed me to see that I could believe a different story about myself. And depending on whether it was by the food, that food would make me feel better, or that I was a failure of a woman because I couldn't have a child. So through her, I started learning more about new ways to think differently about myself that I just didn't think were possible. I just thought if you didn't have a kid, you just automatically thought that your life was going to be at 80% and that things would be good, but never great again. And she was the first one who exposed me to that thought work. And like I mentioned, I found out later she was a certified life coach, and I found out where she got her certification and decided that was going to be how I created the change in my life, was by doing the work through life coaching, and then later to decide that I wanted to become a certified life coach for women who are childless after infertility.
Yeah, that's an amazing shift. And it's so hard to do it, right? The mindset is the most difficult part, I think. But also you mentioned the physical. I gained 30 pounds during my fertility treatments. And then afterwards, just feeling like, well, what's the point of losing it? Because I don't feel good. I don't really want to feel good at this point. I'm just going to accept this as my new body. And so I can completely relate to using food as that kind of comfort and that crutch during that time. But I also think it's so inspiring that you were able to, you know, find something like a podcast that was able to resonate with you, and you were able to pull yourself out and say, wow, if this woman can live life at 100%, even without children, then maybe I can too. And so you talk about the life coaching aspect and getting certified. How did that evolve then for you? Once you got certified, you started working with clients. How does your program work in terms of what you teach women?
Well, I teach women that they're the author of their own story. I just touched on a little bit. We spend a lot of time accepting our truth on somebody else's interpretation of it. And it seems very concrete and it seems rational because there's things that are written in the history books. And you know, when you look in, well, I would say an encyclopedia, but that would age or date me a little bit. But who looks in encyclopedias
anymore?
I know
what that is. It's okay.
when you Google something, it seems like whatever the common consensus is should be accepted as your truth. But the main thing that I teach in my community is that you can decide what story you want to tell about you. And there's nobody that could tell you your story is right or wrong because you're the interpreter of it. And when you realize that you have that liberty to just decide how you want to tell your story. Because I think a lot of us, if someone were to pull you aside and be like, okay, so like, tell me about your infertility journey. When you hear yourself tell the story, is it in a way that is representational of how you want to see yourself? And yes, we've been through some really traumatic things and unexpected, you know, twists and turns, but how you represent yourself doesn't make you feel proud of who you were through that journey. And a lot of our power in our future is going to be based on how we believe about our past. And so if we have never been able to come to a place of reconciliation with our past and reconcile some of the things that we went through that were unexpected, or maybe ways that we showed up that we aren't proud of who we were, or talking about, for example, the choosing not to adopt and my reasons why, or the ways that I felt when I found out that my best friends were having kids. Can I look at the way I responded and have a sense of sympathy for myself and realize that I was just a grieving person? And sometimes we just don't show up in the way that we wanted to show up, or maybe we didn't know that we had the ability to show up any differently. And so really in my coaching practice, I help women figure out how they want to tell their story first, because how you believe about your past is going to be hand in hand with how you produce a future that feels authentic to you. And as far as like how I work with my students, some of them want to do one-on-one. They're just not ready to go into a group setting. Other women are searching for women like them that they can relate to their story. So we have a small group called Thrive After Infertility, and it's a 12 week of class where we meet once a week and have different areas of focus depending on where everyone's goals are. And I really try to make myself, what's the right word, accessible to the needs of the student who's coming to me. Because a lot of times I think it takes so much courage to even say you want to live differently, because we've been so used to not being able to figure out how to do things. So to say yes to coaching takes a lot of courage, because you're saying like, oh my gosh, this is something that I want to try. I don't know how I'll end up. I don't know how I'll do it. I've never been part of a life coaching program before. And just saying yes is like probably the hardest step that people choose to make. And once they do it, and the students that I've worked with, I just love hearing from them and following them on social media and just seeing the difference of where they started and where they are now.
Yeah, I love that. Somebody asked me the other day on a podcast interview that I was on, they said, how did you or why do you do the life coaching? I said, it's really for me about the transformation and the body language that I see change in the students, because they come in and they're just, their body language, you can tell they're just completely defeated. They just don't know which way to turn. They just are looking for someone to take them by the hand and say, let me listen to you. And then let me kind of not tell you what to do, but guide you in a direction that you may find some peace in. And then by the end, just to see their demeanor completely changed. They're just, they have this, they're not, I had one student just say, she's like, I don't feel healed because I'll never really truly be 100%. I'm always going to have this experience that I went through, but I feel like my mindset has been completely transformed and it's allowed me to see my life differently and have a different perspective, one that's positive that I just 6 months ago could not even fathom having. And I'm sure your students feel the same.
And I think a lot of people think that in order to move forward in their life, that they have to be okay with what happened and just say, oh, I'm like glad it happened. And there's certainly moments, which some people don't believe, that I'm super grateful for my infertility because it brought me to different things in my life I don't think I would have ever reached had I become a mom and things went down that path. But there's certainly moments where I look at a mother-child interaction and my eyes well with tears because I'm like, I'll never know what that feels like. But I've stopped allowing myself to believe that I'll never feel fullness or never know love if I don't have that same experience that mother had with her child. And I think there's a false understanding that you have to like come to this place where you're just like happy and rosy and never get affected by things. And I think that's probably one of the most amazing parts of being a human is being able to feel all those emotions and have compassion for yourself when you have that moment that you look across. For me, it happened, I was at the grocery store and there was a mom playing this little piggy on the toes of her baby while we were waiting at the meat and deli counter. For my eyes to fill with tears at the grocery store, I didn't go home and beat myself up for having that happen. I was like, well, Lana, it makes sense. Like, you've been through a lot. That's something that you'll never be able to experience. And not think that there's something wrong with me for feeling emotion all these years later.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And you have your own podcast too, where you talk about some of these topics. Can you talk about that a little bit?
When I started the podcast, I was actually still in my coach certification. So I went through a year-long coach certification program. And a lot of the part of the certification process was getting hours in and coaching hours and practice and submitting the videos and all that stuff. And I remember I was doing a coaching with one of the women who was also getting certified, and she was a realtor and she was in a coaching program for something related to real estate. And she had her own podcast and she was like, you really need to tell your story. Like, people need to hear this story from you. I remember it was Labor Day weekend and it was a 3-day weekend from work. And I was like, well, I don't even know. Like, how do you even start a podcast? And so she told me a little bit about it. And I made a commitment to myself by the end of the 3-day weekend, I would have recorded and uploaded my first episode. So nice. If you go back and listen to my first episode, it is super janky. I recorded it with my earbuds in my closet and the sound quality probably isn't that great, but it was really like the first place where I got all these things off of my chest. And I remember my mom listening to it and she called me in tears and she was like, honey, I'm so sorry. I feel like I was such a bad mom that I didn't know that you were going through all of this. And it was really the first part, I would say, in my most monumental like healing journey was to be able to verbalize some of these things, even though it was like public and I probably would never have told anyone one-on-one if they had asked me all the things that I now share in my podcast. But I felt like there was ears and listeners out there that needed something that if I wanted it and I didn't have it, that they were probably looking for it too. And so that's really how the podcast started. So I have 100 and I want to say by the time this airs, I'm not sure how many I'll have, but I have like 113 episodes that are up, and I try to do it weekly. And it's just me. My episodes are quick. It's 10 or 15 minutes. And just sometimes it's off the cuff and I just maybe experience something and I feel like it's something that someone else might want to hear about through the childless after infertility journey. And sometimes it's more scripted and I think about it and I pre-write, but there's just quick little snippets that I try to give people and let them know that they're not alone in the journey.
I love that. Well, congratulations on publishing that many episodes. I can't at this point imagine 100 episodes, but we will get there.
You will. So. And you'll be like, wow, I can't believe I did it. Right. You'll get there.
No, but I definitely take inspiration from that. And you've paved the way for those of us coming up behind you. And the podcast is great. I love that it's just little bite-sized pieces of your story, pieces of guidance that you found helpful. So we'll definitely put a link to it in the show notes. I want to respect your time. And I always ask this at the end of every episode of my guests. And it doesn't have to be, your answer doesn't have to be related to your journey with fertility. It can be anything. But if you could give your 18-year-old self one piece of advice, knowing what you know now, what would that be?
Well, I would probably tell my 18-year-old self that life is going to take a lot of change and transformation and that it's exciting and that what you think you're going to experience at 18 is just a snippet of what's available to you and that it's okay to change your mind if you want to change your direction in your life.
I love that. Well, Lana, thank you so much for being on today. And if folks are interested in getting in touch with you, just learning more about your community and what you've got going on, what's the best place to find you?
I'm most active on Instagram at lana.manikowski, but my website, lanamanikowski.com, has everything about the Other's Day brunch, which is the Saturday before Mother's Day. I am the founder of the Other's Day brunch. And then I have a book that's going to be coming out later this year in 2024. So it'll have all that information. But usually I'm doing most of my stuff on Instagram.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much for being here and for being vulnerable and sharing your story and for what you're doing for the Childless Not By Choice community.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you for having me.